Welcome to Let's Talk Legal, part of Coastal Daybreak every Tuesday morning and brought to you by Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. You can call in now to have your legal questions answered by attorneys Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. Call in now with your questions at 252-247-7282.
And Cecil Harvell is with us here this morning. Good morning, Cecil. How are you?
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
Doing well.
Good. Listen, last week, Wes and I discussed corporate planning.
Mm-hmm.
We were basically explaining the difference, if you will, between a C-corp and an S-corp. Mm-hmm. And, of course, what a lot of listeners know about and have heard about, known as the LLC.
Right.
Or limited liability company. And we're going to continue that today. Let's review a bit that basically each of these entities are created with the North Carolina Secretary of State.
Mm-hmm.
The Secretary of State's office has general jurisdiction, if you will, over the formation, creation, dissolution of a corporate entity. And those are all corporate entities, the LLC and the corporation. The corporation is a bit confusing, Ben, in that, yes, there is, you know, the classic C-corp and then S-corp, but really the S-corp is just simply a designation with the taxing authority.
Right, right.
The way in which you create a corporation is the same. You create, if you will, a
mm-hmm.
corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Then the corporation elects with the taxing authorities, its taxing status as S corporation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like you, quote, create an S corporation with the Secretary of State and then different documents are used to create a C corporation.
Mm-hmm.
They're the same documents.
Okay.
It's just simply a tax designation. The purpose of the S corporation, of course, is for all of the profits and losses of the corporation to flow down to the individual shareholders or stockholders. This therefore eliminates the tax at both the corporate level, Ben, as well as at the individual level. The
okay.
LLC is a statutory creation. It's not ancient in its nature. It's been around, I don't know, maybe, you know, 50, 70 years, maybe that, maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
It's a statutory entity. And the limited liability company that we use in our office many times is a corporate coverture, if you will, for holding assets. Things such as your professional building, your charter boat, your tractor trailer rig,
uh-huh.
any kind of rental real estate that you might have. These are classic assets that are held in a LLC or limited liability company, Ben, for the owners or members of that LLC. And of course, what is happening here with regard to all of these entities, as we discussed last week and we'll mention again now, is that if we stand up, walk and talk like a corporate entity, if we create the documents properly, we issue the stock or issue the membership interest, we have bylaws for the corporation, we have operating agreements for the LLC, we have meetings, we maintain corporate accounting methods. We have federal ID numbers. Then if these details are in place, then obviously a liability pursuing person and or corporation is not going to be able to pierce the corporate veil and get to the individual assets of either the shareholder or the member in an LLC. And so the purpose of a corporate entity many times is to limit the personal liability of the owners of the corporation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to give an example, if you own 7 or 8 rental properties and
yeah.
you just own them individually,
mm-hmm.
and then something happens with regard to one of the tenants or there's an accident or injury or death,
mm-hmm.
then potentially, you know, the individual owner of that property is going to have the liability, and that's a problem.
Right.
Because, you know, that individual owner might also have significant assets, personal assets. If, on the other hand, those rental properties are placed in, you know, XYZ Rental Company LLC, and the details are properly adhered to, as we just mentioned, then if there is a accident or injury on one of those rental properties and they're owned by XYZ LLC, then the plaintiff pursuer of the remedy is going to need to sue the corporate entity, the LLC. And that is going to be the limit of the exposure to the members of the LLC, only the assets in the corporation. The plaintiff is not going to be able to get to, you know, the savings accounts, the personal residence, the IRAs, the stock accounts, anything of that nature relative to the assets of the individual member.
Well, this brought up, this brings up a question that was brought up, you know, some time ago, in this topic. Is it, should, if you have rent, multiple rental properties, should each one be in its own LLC?
Well, we do look at that issue. And in a perfect, legal world, that is exactly what one would do. We many times will kind of, I just basically for ease of administration for clients, you know, they will maybe if they have, you know, seven or eight rental properties, then they will, you know, maybe have three or four LLCs. But no, you do not. Your point is, Ben, and it's a good point, that you don't want to feed all of your, you know, commercial property into one LLC, because then again, what if there is a problem?
Yeah. Okay.
These entities, Ben, I should hasten to say, and then we'll move on to some of the agreements that we sometimes put in place. These entities are not expensive to create, and they are not expensive to maintain. A couple of $100 a year in terms of maintenance. There's a corporate tax return, but, you know, if the accounting methods are organized, that's a fairly, you know, typical charge. Nothing out of the gate. You know, not thousands of dollars. I would say hundreds of dollars a year. So if you have rental property that is, in fact, generating thousands of dollars, then it, a year, then, you know, it's worth a few hundred dollars to have those legal, to have your legal affairs, in order. And so you're absolutely right. I had a client in just a week or so ago that we created three LLCs because there are three different significant rental properties and he did not want to put all of them in one LLC. So absolutely we do that.
Okay. All right. Again, that has become a very, very popular way to incorporate a business.
Well, it has. Now, Ben, sometimes these corporate entities, be a corporation or be an LLC, are, you know, very closely held within a family. Maybe even, you know, it's just the, you know, the spouses, the husband and the wife who own the small, you know, family corporation or have their rental properties in a family LLC. And that's all fine. But when you move beyond that and you move into siblings who own a corporate entity.
Right.
Or certainly business partners. People like, for instance, you know, Wes and myself, we are in a, you know, professional, corporation together. It is very important at that point that there be shareholder agreements or, again, for an LLC, member agreements.
Okay. We have a caller with a question. Let's go to Ryan in Swansboro. Hi, Ryan. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I got a question. If you have two rental properties and you have your general contractor's license, could you just combine that under one LLC?
You mean with the, with your contractor's license? You mean
Yes, sir.
Yeah, with that.
Would you, would you do two separate LLCs, or would you?
Yeah, you you would not want to combine your business licensing, contracting, entity with your, quote, holding company for your, rental properties. I would absolutely bifurcate them, and I would have, your contracting, contractor, carpentry, whatever it happens to be that requires a license in one company, and I would have your rental properties in another.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Thank you, Ryan. But again, that's precisely what we were talking about. I mean, that's a very good example. And he has an ongoing business, which is that he wants to have his license.
Well, let me talk. I hope Ryan is still listening, because I bet maybe, like I say so many times on the program, we lawyers many times have to tell clients what they don't want to hear.
Yeah. Right.
And I don't know that Ryan wanted to hear that. Okay.
Right, right.
But let me explain why. And then he probably will. And take this good advice. I mean, he's out there, from what little bit I know, doing his contractor, mm-hmm. and using his contractor's license. Well, there's right there a possibility of liability.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's active. He's involved in the business. It's his day-to-day concern. And, for heaven's sakes, there could very likely be, a liability.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right, right.
Well, we don't want his rental properties that he's trying to improve his financial life with tied up in his day-to-day potential liability of his contracting.
Mm-hmm.
I would separate those. I'd have very little assets in his day-to-day business, such as his, in his case, a contracting business.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have the majority of his assets titled over in a different LLC that would not be exposed if there were a liability. The chances of his liability are within his day-to-day business of being a contractor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly great chances. There.
Great chance. Yeah. And we don't want his rental properties to be in that same entity.
Okay, we'll have more to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal. Your calls are welcome, 247-7282. If you'd like to reach us, ask your question to Cecil Harvell from Harvell & Collins. You can also go online and listen to past shows, all listed by topics. Go to harvellandcollins.com. We'll have more to come in a moment. And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal. Cecil Harvell is with us, answering your legal questions, 247-7282.
So, Ben, again now, it's very likely that folks are going to have partners. There's going to be a couple of family members, two brothers, brother, sister, whatever the circumstances are.
Mm-hmm.
But we just many times see companies that have more than one shareholder or more than one member in the LLC. And at this point, it becomes critically important that they reduce to writing, which is just simply an agreement. As
right.
to what happens if the twists and turns of life begin to affect any of these shareholders. And by twists and turns, I mean, what if there's a disability? What if someone becomes very sick and is mm-hmm. unable to work? What if there is a death? What happens to the shares of the corporation if there is a death? What happens if someone elects to just simply retire or walk away from the corporation, withdraw for their interest in the corporation? Now, you can only imagine, and Wes, of course, is preparing for a hearing this morning before Superior Court judge at 9 o'clock, so he's not here.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, these are the files, that are on his desk.
Yeah.
Because when there is no agreement, there is most likely, quote, litigation.
Mm.
That's a problem. If there's a clear agreement, we can avoid this kind of litigation between shareholders, between members of an LLC. Almost always, Ben, the fly in the ointment
mm-hmm.
is the value.
Mm-hmm.
What is the value of this company?
Huh.
One shareholder dies, one shareholder resigns, one shareholder becomes disabled, one shareholder retires. They want their value. And, of course, they say the value is, quote, high. The surviving shareholder says the value, of course, is low. Mm-hmm. And now we've got a problem.
Hmm.
So there needs to be a mechanism within these agreements, and there are many different formulas that we lawyers know and use that dictate how we determine the value.
Yeah.
And if we determine the value based on, you know, the tax values of the various properties that are in the LLC, okay?
Yeah.
Then there we go. There's no controversy mm-hmm. in that. It's black and white. There are many different values that we use. There can be the agreement mm-hmm. that there be a binding appraisal on mm-hmm. the assets of the corporation, but there needs to be an agreement. There needs to be a meeting of the minds as to, well, how are we going to determine this value
mm-hmm.
If one of us are no longer able to be involved in the corporation?
Right. Now, so just to go back to something you said many, many times, it's the
sure.
four corners of the document, of the agreement, are going to be your first place you start there.
They are. And they're just going to, it's a very basic, document. It's not a terribly expensive document either
mm-hmm.
because it's just simply saying that should any of these I always use these words twists and turns. I use it in estate planning as well. And in, you know, in anything that we do, twists and turns of life,
mm-hmm.
divorce, sickness, disability, death, change of circumstances, okay, in life where you need to retire
mm-hmm.
or move away, withdrawal from the corporation. Maybe this is because your spouse is very sick or child. Twists and turns
mm-hmm.
are out there in life, aren't they, Ben?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Indeed.
And they come to the table with regard to good corporate planning. And there needs to be a written document that addresses that if any of these twists and turns occur with regard to a member in an LLC or a shareholder in a corporation, then this is how we determine the value.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it can be done. A very simple formula, that one of the formulas that we use sometimes, is just simply that the two parties agree what the value is.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows the value of something better than the two of them
mm-hmm.
when they are in good stead with each other. Okay? So at an annual meeting, they say that should there be any change of circumstance with regard to a shareholder, the value of the corporation is $350,000.
Right.
And they both sign that. They then update this when they have their annual meeting, which they're supposed to be having, by the way. We've talked about that
mm-hmm.
last week and again this week. And they just simply agree year to year. If for some reason there is no written agreement, then it's the last known written agreement. Maybe they did it in 2016 and
mm-hmm.
they forgot about it, 17, 18, and now we're at 19, but at least we've got 16. And they've agreed that the last known value
mm-hmm.
is the value that applies. Now, again, Ben, that's only one of the many formulas. That is a formula to agree that there should be a business valuation expert, and who that person and or entity would be
mm-hmm.
is another formula that is sometimes used. But again, the important thing is that the shareholders have an agreement.
Otherwise, they've
left this issue up in the air. And I absolutely assure you that it will come down to the price
mm-hmm.
and there will be a disagreement about that price. And or offsets, or I contributed this, you didn't contribute that, and off we go.
Yeah, I paid the taxes.
I paid the taxes.
Yeah, right.
You didn't. You know, I put more time in the corporation than you did.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there we are, unfortunately, in a litigation.
We'll have more to come in a moment here. If you have questions, 247-7282. We'd love to hear from you. 247-7282. We're with Cecil Harvell of Harvell & Collins, online at harvellandcollins.com. Hey, welcome back to the program. Talking about LLCs and other corporate entities and how to perhaps the agreement that might get you out of one at some point in time.
Yeah, that's right. So what happens, Ben, in our office is that when we have these shareholders and or members of an LLC initially in the office creating the entity, we go ahead and we get that created. We do the initial meeting. We issue the certificates of membership or stock certificate. We help them get a federal ID number, get the corporate bank account established. And then, of course, we mention to them, now, by the way, we need to have a, we adopt bylaws or we adopt a membership agreement, operating agreement in an LLC. And then, of course, right after that, we address the fact that, by the way, guys and girls, we need a shareholder agreement. And let's talk about what happens if anything affects one of you in terms of these twists and turns of life. And let's adopt a formula for valuing this corporation. And let's reduce this to writing, knowing full well, Ben, that this agreement, like any contract, it can be modified at any time. It can be modified or amended. You know, the same, the agreement that's done on an upstart corporation or an upstart LLC is probably not going to be the identical agreement that we're going to have 10 years or 20 years later.
Yes.
We're going to need to have a modification to the agreement, but that absolutely can be done. But it's worth its weight in gold that you have such an agreement, or shareholder agreement, membership interest agreement in place.
Okay. So, that agreement, you have it in place, as you said, right at the very beginning, but review it every few years.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep. Make any modification to it. Update the value of the company, if that's the formula that you are using. There's clarity then if for some reason anyone in the LLC dies, their estate knows exactly what the value happens to be. That is a factual scenario, Ben, that we see a lot, as you would expect.
Right, right.
That, you know, a shareholder or a member of an LLC is no longer with us. They die, and then the estate is having to assert the rights of the deceased shareholder. And, of course, the big question is, well, what is the value? And what is the mechanism for this shareholder's interest in the corporation to come to an end? After all, they're no longer living.
Right, right.
Does the share go back to the corporation? It's just simply redeemed by the corporation? Or does it, or is it assignable to the surviving heirs?
There you go. Yep. And again, it all depends on how your original document was written. And you want to get the advice on that, you want to call on the folks at Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law. You can go online, again, to find out more at harvellandcollins.com.